Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 17th of November. It is Friday, and I don't know if this is an arbiter of anything. All I know is that when I walked in today, I just looked at everyone and said, good morning. And everyone, five people from the time I made my way to the from the front door to my desk, I said, hey, good morning. And they looked at me and said, it's Friday. So I feel that's indicative of something, right?
Yes.
It is Friday.
It's
that's
chilly.
Good. Yeah. Well, good morning. Welcome, everybody. It's nice to have you with us on this Friday morning, and we're thrilled to have you be a part of our conversation as we try to slog our way through the news of the day. A lot happened yesterday. My God. I was trying to pick out stories, and it's difficult because there's so much going on that seems like it deserves attention, and so we'll talk about that. And let me introduce who we'll be talking about all of that with. Rich Honan is here. We always love when Rich is here. Rich is our a corporate attorney. He joins us, and this is how it basically works. And tell me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Rich. Rich comes on, and he knocks it out of the park. He's great. We all love him. And then he says, I say to him as he's walking out the door, will you come on next week? And he says, eh. and then I have to beg him a little bit, and then he always says, well, if you have an opening. And I said, I always have an opening.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, all right. So and then people say, well, why don't you have Rich on more often? And I just say, ask Rich.
No, I will tell you, out in the world, people, I say, no, they do invite me. It's all logistics, right?
It's logistics.
So it's not, people, they're not, I'm not, to my knowledge, you're not trying to silence me.
No, my God, that's the furthest thing from the truth.
Quite to the contrary,
furthest thing from the truth.
I know that. I appreciate it.
But
and it's nice to be here.
This is really none of my business. And far be it from me to bring this up right now.
Okay, so let's talk about it on the radio then.
Exactly. But is it more psychological than it is logistical?
It's a little of both.
Yeah, okay.
I will say the listeners, for the most part, are really nice and really supportive. And, you know, you meet them out there. I still tense up in the supermarket when somebody says, are you Rich Honan? You know, it does take... there are some other people who express their views via email and other things, and it takes me a couple of weeks to kind of bounce back from that.
But for the most part,
the listeners are great. You guys are great.
Well,
always happy to be here when I'm here.
You know, we give you a parking space. What more do you want?
There it is.
The real perks.
The real perks.
Is that true? I've always parked on the street.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, well, maybe that's
donated
part of the
my
problem.
Money to the city of Albany, which I'm happy to do.
Joe Bonilla is here. He is a communications consultant. He is he's a regular on our program, and we're thrilled to have him. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Joe. How are you this morning?
Fine, thank you. And Judith Hank is with us. She's a former EPA administrator, and she also joins us each and every Friday. We're thrilled to have her. We don't have to twist her arm. She had an event and hightailed it back from the city, right?
Rye, New York,
and made it here just in time for the show. So we're thrilled.
Dodging the deer on the Taconic.
Nobody should ever go on the Taconic. The way to get back is on Route 684 and 22. That's the way.
That seems deer heavy too.
That way,
yeah.
No, it's not.
It's a lot of deer.
That way you can stop. You can stop at the Red Rooster on the way back.
It was midnight.
Yeah, they're always open.
Right.
Yeah. They're always open.
And there is something on the Taconic. I'm telling you now. We all know it. There's a point at which you have just sheer wall on either side.
Yes, my least favorite spot.
And that is known
spot.
As the wall of death.
Yeah.
Because
especially in the winter.
There's no way around that.
Yeah, they're just putting you in a trough.
Yeah, go slow.
It's not fun.
The Shartocks don't go on the Taconic.
Okay.
Who knew?
I know somebody wanted to do something with that, but we just kind of let that one go.
We held our tongue.
Chartocks won't go in there. Anyway,
but feel free to write in on that one.
Alan Chartock is here. He is. You won't find him on the Taconic, but you will find him here. Talking about issues of the day. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I want you to know there was that point at which we were in a Chinese restaurant. I swallowed some lobster meat, and I was going to be asphyxiated. And Roselle saved my life.
Hmm.
So what do we take from that? All of the letters to Roselle saying, what'd you do that for?
When was that?
It's quite a while ago.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it happened last night.
No, kids were younger.
No, okay.
I just thought I'd mention it in terms of the Taconic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got you. All right.
Don't eat lobster meat on the Taconic is the moral of the story.
All right. So good morning, everybody. Welcome. Let's get to the topics at hand. And there's a lot to get to, as I mentioned. We might as well start with the Al Franken story, because which I wasn't going to start with, and then then there was the president's tweets from overnight and this morning, and I thought, well, all right, let's talk about it. Al Franken, I'll admit it right off the bat. He was a man I greatly respected. I've interviewed him. I've met him many times. I like him. And so this one has hit me pretty hard, because I actually respected him. Most of these people I didn't know or I didn't respect. This person I actually respected. So he's issued an apology after accusations of forcible kissing and groping and
a picture.
And a horrible, horrible, horrible picture that was taken during a 2006 USO tour in the Middle East. This was before he was the senator from the state of Minnesota, and the woman by the name of Leanne Tweeden, who is a personality, radio and television personality in Los Angeles, was on that tour with Mr. Franken, and she wrote her story, and she told her story yesterday morning. And she released that picture, as well as talked about it on her own program, as well as many other shows yesterday. One of the most compelling, I think, being on Jake Tapper's CNN show. She was on for 40 minutes talking, and it was very compelling. And certainly a couple of takeaways from that interview was that she said she thought that the first apology that he gave was very weak. She thought the second apology sounded very, very heartfelt, and that if she had seen Al Franken between the time that happened and now, and said that she accepted his apology, and also didn't think that it didn't mean that he should be necessarily lose his job in the Senate, which of course many are calling for, and also there is an investigation which he has endorsed. Then President Trump, who has himself been accused of sexual harassment by multiple women and has refrained from weighing in on the accusations against Roy Moore, who of course is running for Senate in Alabama, wrote on Twitter late last night that the Al Frankenstein picture is really bad, speaks 1,000 words. He continued to tweet in a cruder manner, where do his hands go in pictures 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 while she sleeps? And then to think that just last week he was lecturing anyone who would listen about sexual harassment and respect for women, Leslie Stahl tape, ? I don't know what that means. Does anyone know what that means?
Did he at some point make a joke or tried to make a joke about raping Leslie Stahl years ago or something?
The other way around. It may have been the shtick was that she was going to rape him.
They were writing Saturday Night Live material. And he had suggested a scene where Leslie Stahl would be drugged and then raped in a closet.
I thought it was the other way around, but maybe I'm wrong. Huh.
Well,
and by the way, I only read it. I didn't read any of this primary source.
Right.
I'm reporting what's been reported.
We got this from Trump. So
yeah, I wouldn't have known about it had it not been in the
and that's
Donald
what Trump
tweet.
Does. He loves to drop these
three-word things.
And remember, every time something like this happens, it's diversion from everybody yelling at Trump about one thing or the other, including Roy Moore.
Certainly.
Although I don't think the Roy Moore story is going to go away anytime soon. It is so compelling. And I was surprised that Trump tweeted about this 10 o'clock last night, given his own history.
Yeah.
And what he is criticizing, and I think rightly criticizing Frank and on, the same and worse can be said about Trump.
I agree with you up to a point. I agree with you. I think that I agree with the New York Times here, because I thought that the tweet was very crude and
yes.
almost and insulting
Awful.
And disturbing in and of itself. And then I just had to go back just for my own reality check and look at the transcript of the Access Hollywood tape of where he says, I better use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. I move on them like a bitch. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
And then, of course, there was the famous song.
Well, right. And then he says, whatever you want. And he says, yes, grab them by the, you can do anything. Look at those legs. I can see the legs. So, all right. So one of the things, and I don't know, it seems as though this Al Franken story certainly gained traction and perhaps... Do you think we would be talking about it in the sense that we're talking about if there wasn't that picture?
I think the picture certainly makes it much more real for folks to see that. You know, certainly when you looked at situations before with Bill Cosby, for example, there wasn't the photos. But when you started seeing photos and you have this photographic evidence that paints that picture, certainly it makes it much more real for folks' eyes.
Because it makes you believe or helps you believe the second part of the allegation, which is that he forcibly tried to kiss her and move in on her, and she pushed him away and said, get away from me. But the photographic evidence. But here again, we have the president on tape. What I don't understand.
Yeah. Well,
help me.
Yeah. Before we get to Trump, which I never tire of speaking of his inadequacies.
Help me on both.
Back to Franken. Remember the context here. They were both on a USO tour. She was volunteering her time. The picture. She was protecting herself from danger. She was wearing a flak jacket and a helmet. And she was probably exhausted from international travel. And then she wasn't protecting herself from the right thing. And that is deeply disturbing. And I think, sadly, that photo is going to follow not only Franken, but the victim, the survivor, for a long time.
Now, an understanding on the pictures, because there was a USO photographer, correct, that had taken those photos and then had given all of the photos to all of the participants. She didn't know about this until it was directly following. So even to President Trump's thing about what happened in photos 2, 3, 4, and 5, well, they got all the photos, right?
But Joe, he was proud of that photo.
Well, that's the thing. It's that look. It's that look that is so disturbing.
Yeah,
and
that grin.
Yeah. Oh, the grin. But here's the other question, and Judith, you can help me on this one too. If some of the rumors are true, and then she is that there was a vein of this that was political, and that because we know that she has worked extensively with Sean Hannity, that she Roger Stone apparently. Had known about this and had some contact and talked about this, which again doesn't make any of it right. I just bring up the question of why not use it during the campaign?
I don't know.
Is it because of the culture?
Well, I think certainly the issue has become much more high profile in the last few weeks and months. Maybe I read that she has small children. Maybe she did not want this to come out. She didn't want to be victimized again. And, you know, maybe it is political, but the bottom line is it happened. And she now...
But if that had come out during a Senate campaign,
he
would not have been the
Absolutely.
Senator of the state.
Absolutely. So, in a way, if she really was looking to damage him politically, she would have advanced that photo when he was running.
Which, by the way, and again, in a very compelling interview where she, I thought, was just the only time that she really became very emotional was when she was talking about the impact on her children. but was saying that she wasn't doing this to destroy anyone. She was doing this because of the climate.
And she said she accepted his apology.
Yeah.
But look, this really has scarred her. And it does now feel like we're at a place in our culture where more women feel more comfortable is the wrong word, but more willing to come forward and share fairly difficult experiences in their life.
Can we talk about Donald Trump now?
Sure. Now
okay.
We can.
All right.
One more point on Frank. One more point on Franken. If you look at what happened in 2008, he had the closest Senate election in history.
At like 312
votes.
312 votes.
Between him and Norm Coleman. And you look at his swearing in July 2009 gave Democrats a 60-vote majority in the Senate. Without Franken, we would have never had the Affordable Care Act. We would have had a lot of things over the last 9 years would have been vastly different. So you look at the impact. If that photograph of the story had come out right during that campaign, what would have been different in the last 10 years?
Mm. Well, let's. I have a lot more to talk about. We want to talk about that. We want to talk about Roy Moore. We want to talk about other things
say Dick Nixon went to China? You know, Joe, that, you know, Dick Nixon had a very respectable, Judith, you'll probably, you know, get on me on this one, but it had a very respectable environmental, record also.
Yeah.
So, on the other hand, he did set the Watergate burglars in motion. I can't get around it.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Hey, Rich, we'll let you talk, I promise. I know you've got things to say.
It was interesting. I was listening.
I thought you were just going out looking for your parking spot. We'll be back.
Anybody have a quarter?
We'll be back in return after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. So we have been talking about Al Franken. We were getting to the point of bringing this together and talking about the President of the United States, his tweets overnight, and also how this relates to the Roy Moore case, because it does relate, mm-hmm. right? I mean,
yes.
We're looking at what all this says, because there's some in the Senate that said even if Roy Moore won, they wouldn't seat him in the Senate because of these allegations. And then we also have the putting the certainly digging his heels in Roy Moore and continuing to fight as more women come forward and corroborate the story from the original complaint. And then on top of that, yesterday, while the national GOP has distanced themselves and has stopped fundraising and so forth, the Alabama GOP has said, yeah, he's our guy.
And media reports that when he was in the district attorney's office, Roy Moore was banned from the local shopping mall because he was constantly hitting on teenage girls. And, you know, my rule of thumb is if you're banned from the shopping mall, you should be banned from the U.S. Senate. I think we can all agree on that.
It seems as though that makes sense. So what are the politics of this? What's going to happen in this case? I mean, there's a lot of variables, but there's also a lot of possible scenarios, right?
Well, I think one thing you have to remember is what the Ethics Committee does and who they are. This is a group of three and three, I believe, three Democrats, three Republicans. They traditionally have never really talked about in the Ethics Committee what happened before somebody got to the Senate or to the whatever. And so it's unlikely there is going to be a whole discussion of whether this is their province or not. In any case, it's going to take quite a while. Now, how much longer does Franken have on his
Franken?
He's not up next
he's
year.
Got a
it's
couple
2020.
Years.
Yeah.
And the Moore election is the 12th. I wouldn't count on the Senate Ethics Committee for much of anything, and
right.
certainly not in a timely fashion.
The Bob Packwood case took 30 months.
Yeah.
30 months.
And Mitch McConnell was pivotal in that. And I want to bring it back to your request earlier, Joe, of bringing it back to the president. I appreciated Mitch McConnell when asked about whether Moore should drop out of the race. He said, "I believe the women." I want to hear Donald Trump say those words.
No, on the contrary, he said the exact opposite.
Yeah, well, Trump said they're all lying. Yeah, he said after the election passed, he was going to sue all the women who accused him of sexual
assault.
Yes, and I'm sorry, just to clarify, he said all of the women in his case were lying, not that the women in the Roy Moore case were
right,
lying.
Right. Yes, Trump said in his case. We've got to keep these horrible offenses clear in our mind. But I give McConnell credit for saying, I believe the women, and I want to hear the president say that. We'll never hear him say that about anything.
That's yes. Okay, we're all on that, right? You even you.
I don't know what.
What do you make of the Roy Moore case?
I think the larger issue is whether it's Roy Moore, whether it's Al Franken, whether it's the president is. I think we almost belittle the issue by then dividing it into, you know, how many Republicans versus how many Democrats. I mean,
doesn't matter.
Right. It's just there's this overriding. This overriding idea of males exerting power over females, whether it's, you know, physically or, you know, sexually or politically or business-wise, is unfortunately the only bipartisan thing going on in Washington, you know, and beyond. I mean, we're not, you know, and beyond. So I really give a lot of credit to this woman,
Leanne Tweeden,
because I thought she was so, and I've heard really highly placed women say this before, women who I thought were like bulletproof, you know, like, wow, you've gotten to this level, how could you be afraid of, you know, leveling any accusation, especially when you know it's so true? And I've heard it before. They say, you know, you just, the effect on you is both as a victim and in business and in your reputation, no matter how high up. And I thought it was really important of her to come out and say, even though I was successful before, I didn't feel comfortable, and now, you know, I feel like I have to do it. And I agree with you, Judith. I don't think she was doing it to get at him. I don't think. I don't know. But you're right. There would have been more opportune times for her to do it. I don't think it was without politics. But, you know, I get that. But I just think the larger issue, before we start counting up, oh, there's five Democrats who did it and four, you know, Republicans, and, you know, the president and this. I think if we could shine a light on the larger, the power issue, I think it would be a helpful thing.
I agree with you. And I don't know. I don't think we've gotten there yet, and hopefully we won't, of a counting up as far as the Democrats versus Republicans. But it does seem as the Senate, as the Congress, as the nation deals with this issue, that it is hard to put into a proper context and to come to. The reckoning that we should all come to, that this is wrong and is not acceptable in any way, shape, or form. And oh, by the way, our president has been accused of the same thing, and we have him on tape saying it.
And it's not just Trump. Bill Clinton.
He's not the only president.
Bill
right.
Clinton and
across party lines.
And sadly, this
George H.W.
Yeah,
Bush.
This issue is everywhere.
John Kennedy.
And the list goes on.
Yeah.
And it has to change. And I think that's why this moment is so important, because, you know, we just should not put up with this in our workplace, with our elected officials, in our churches and synagogues. This has to change.
So where do you draw the line between? So we were talking off air. I mean, everybody's flawed, right, to some extent. So where do we draw at what point do we? And I believe anything that involves sexual harassment, I think we pretty much agree that, you know, that's past the line. But with lesser things, you know, where do you draw the line between accepting somebody who, you know, has some human flaws, you know, or creating standards that just we in our culture don't think are possible?
Well, I think the other issue too is, you know, really identifying when it is no longer politically expedient to defend these individuals. You look at Bill Clinton.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And certainly now you have Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who has been a very big patron of the largesse of the Clintons, saying that he should have resigned the presidency during the impeachment proceedings. So you're seeing this shift where it's no longer politically expedient that way.
Well, also, I will also say, and now I'm just parroting what right wing radio says. Okay, so
very openly.
Thank you for the warning.
Yes. So get ready.
We'll run for cover.
Those of you at home, that yeah, it's great that, that people are coming to that view on Clinton, but it's also after the Clintons have lost any last vestige of political use to
clout.
Them, you know? Yeah. But still, it's good. I like what Judith is saying. If we're going to now get a little more introspective and demand a little bit more, then, you know, this will have been, you know, a teachable moment.
But and I mean, Alan has made this point before too, and not in the terms of this, but just in general. But as Clinton left office after being impeached, his favorable rating was still 80%. I mean, that culture has changed. I mean, even it's people were still supporting him even after that.
They
so,
were.
So our. Our collective conscious on this has hopefully changed.
But let's also look back at that time. The amount of time and resources, the Ken Starr investigation that was like a $70 million investigation, the political distraction, Clinton have to set up a separate war room. That, you know, you only have so much bandwidth when you are an elected official. And to spend all of that time and money on that issue, I don't know why business leaders are not being more aggressive in intervening and being proactive on this issue. Because the Clinton controversy really derailed the nation's political discussion.
Well, they certainly are in the business context. I understand you're saying, why aren't business leaders, you know, demanding more of politicians, you know, but...
And in their own workplaces.
Oh, I got to say, I think in the workplace, business... a lot of businesses are very willing to take very quick action on far less... on far less verifiable evidence than we've seen in the newspapers, and just for that, whether putting aside right or wrong, just we don't need this distraction. Okay, if you come with that baggage, we don't need you.
It's interesting because escaping all of this is National Public Radio. In this, we saw Mike Oreskes go down on as a result of this. All of a sudden, the president of NPR says he has a heart problem and he has to step aside. You know, his doctor has told him to do that. I have no reason not to believe that. The chair of the NPR board resigns for his chairmanship. He's still on the board and gets off that presidency. And then it turns out, according to quite a good article, what's the guy's name on who writes for NPR?
Flokenflik
points out that there have been accusations against the guy who was the chair of the board.
Well, and also there was great. There was almost they were mounting almost what I'm using this word somewhat loosely, and I shouldn't, but almost a coup in the sense of that the women working there were very upset about the way that the entire matter has been handled internally. Speaking of NPR, real quick though, I will give them credit for a story they ran yesterday. I don't know if anybody heard it, but. They had Tippi Hedren, Melanie Griffith, and Dakota Johnson on, three generations of actress, mother, daughter, and granddaughter. And Tippi Hedren, who has leveled her own accusations against Alfred Hitchcock while working with him under contract with the guy, but three generations of actresses reflecting on harassment in Hollywood. It was a fascinating conversation.
Yeah,
really, really fascinating conversation. To your point, Rich, I will say that Dakota Johnson was saying that because of what her grandmother and her mother had gone through, that the many of the workplaces were much better where she was because of things
and
that
hopefully
had changed.
She didn't have to deal with Harvey Weinstein.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and also hopefully this. I'm sorry, I keep forgetting Tweeden.
Yes.
This woman,
Tweeden.
Yeah. I hopefully she's not going to now have to deal as this becomes inevitably more political, right? And people start spinning it. I hope that she now does not become the target of, you just did this because it was politics and,
sadly, I think that's already started.
Yeah. And many of the women who accused Roy Moore when they were teenagers, they're being victimized all over again. I think the major point here is that sexual harassment is a problem everywhere. It's from Fox News to NPR. It's from Democrats to Republicans. It's even in places of worship, religious and faith centers. And what's good is addressing it, holding people accountable, and then working really, really hard to prevent it so there are not other instances like this.
Let's take a break. When we come back, Alan has a whole handful of letters. A lot of people want to weigh in on this. We'll let you do that, and we will continue our conversation right after this. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our program this morning. Very nice to have you with us. 9:48 on your Friday morning. suddenly I'm going back to my commercial radio days. 9:48 on a Friday morning. Good morning, everybody.
Traffic on 787. It's brutal.
Traffic on the 8s. It's good to have you here. Rich Honan is here, Joe Bonilla, Judah Thing, and of course Alan Chartok. We go to letters.
Jude, a chance for Al Franken's self-inflicted shame and humility. Is now for him to lead the charge and finally tackle the patriarchal dominance and hypocrisy in Washington, if he has the guts. Hats off to Leanne Tweeden for accepting his apology. It creates such an opportunity to make real and necessary change. Jump in, anybody, if you've got something to say. Rich says, David says about Rich, just my two cents. Love it when Rich is on the show. And that's from Dave. See, there you go, Rich.
Thank you.
Is David your brother?
Did you see me tense up?
Yeah. Right.
Wendy says, the new witch hunt. As a woman, I'm very glad to see women finally being able to say no and it being heard. The Me Too movement, where our stories are being heard and a way injustice is finally being felt happening. But I'm also worried about good people being hurt by what was once considered acceptable by all, even a compliment by some, now being used to blacklist anyone who disagrees with what we want everyone to believe. Times are changing, and that's a good thing. But taking the old things out of context and criminalizing innocence is not. Please don't make anyone who looked cross-eyed at another become a witch hunt or bring us back to the McCarthy days. We need now, more than ever, to bring common sense to the forefront and realize that our culture was different and we must make sure we judge accordingly.
Go ahead, Judith.
Go ahead. It's not about looking at people cross-eyed. It's often about unwanted physical advances. It's about demoralizing women in the workplace. It's about having power over women in the workplace, economic power. You know, the conversation is really important, and we pay attention when we know the figures in the media. We all know Al Franken. We all know President Trump. I did a commentary yesterday that ran on this station, and I pointed out that harassment is also a big problem for women who are almost invisible in our society. Think about a nanny who is maybe here illegally and is being harassed and feels like she can't take action. Think about waitresses. Think about women in male-dominated professions like truckers and electricians. This is not, you know, unique to high-profile situations. It is more devastating when women don't have economic power and don't have the ability to walk off the job or don't really have a functioning human HR office. And so I think for us to really force cultural change, we need to go deeper into people whose names we don't know, we'll never know. And then what are men in those workplaces doing to support women who are being victimized?
And it's so I'm sorry, Joe.
Well, I was struck by the woman who made the first accusation against Roy Moore of saying of why she hadn't come forward. And mm-hmm. she said, I knew mm-hmm. because of my past. I knew because I had not always led an exemplary life that people would come after me and I wouldn't be taken seriously and it would be about me and not him. Mm-hmm. And that's heartbreaking. I mean, that really is heartbreaking
it
when
is.
You think about that.
And it's not just the, as you say, the invisible, the women who are perceived to have no power because, in the business world, you know, I know that you can talk to really high level, really, you know, executive, you know, smart, brilliant women who, besides whatever they have to deal with here, then they have to go on business trips to China and mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. Asia, and which I know is China. Europe, and still deal with all of those issues that where it's actually better here in the United States than that. But the issue is so immense.
No one is immune from it.
Yeah.
And, you know, good luck riding the New York City subway when
right.
it's crowded.
Right.
It's everywhere.
It's about having respect for fellow humans. And
mm-hmm.
whether
exactly
you're a man
right.
or you're a woman, it's just having that baseline respect to not do anything that's wrong.
Okay, so Patrick, or is it Irving? I'm not sure. Says
those are two really different names.
Well, except that it says Patrick Irving on the thing.
Oh, okay. well, that might be.
I don't know who's who and who is which. Said, would you please talk about the House GOP $5.9 trillion tax cut? Would you please talk about the House GOP $5.9 trillion tax cuts? These cuts primarily help major corporations and the super rich. The $4.5 trillion offsetting tax increase mainly repeal exemptions and deductions that the middle class depends on. This is theft on a grand scale. Well, he said it.
Yeah, he's close to right. I will say that the I do think this is one where the you know, the old, oh, we're, you know, just giving, you know, it's a tax break for the rich. I don't know that this one is as egregious, I'll use the word, say, as, you know, the Reagan tax cuts, for example. I actually think, look, as somebody who I've already figured out is probably going to owe, you know, five figures more, you know, under this, I'm not real happy with it. I feel really betrayed by the Republicans. But I actually think there will be some tax savings for people. I think if you're somebody who takes the standard deduction, generally, I think there's a good chance you actually will save some money. Yeah, I agree that big corporations are getting a big break, and the whole, you know, the estate tax thing is ridiculous.
Yeah, but Rich, there are a lot of studies out now from people like the House people who are charged with studying this stuff, who say that the middle class and the lower middle class are going to get screwed under this bill.
I think what they're saying, what those studies are saying, is in the initial instance, maybe in the initial instance, I still think that people who take the standard deduction will do better initially. But now they're talking about the indexing. They're talking about indexing the tax rates to something other than, you know, the CPI. Now they're talking about a different inflation index that's actually going to bring all these brackets up. And this is something, you know, buried in it. It's an index that we've never used before.
And that's, by the way, Rich, is what happened to the AMT, the alternative minimum tax. The people who got screwed by it were, it was assumed, would not be taken by it, but they ended up, because of exactly what you're talking about, this inflationary rate happened. Yeah. Victoria says, Al Franken mugs in a photo showing a preposterous attempt to fondle breasts, a fellow actor dressed in camouflage and a flak jacket. Is the photo in poor taste? Yes. Was it meant to be funny? Absolutely. Look, I'm a woman who is in fear that when Puritanism overtakes the discourse, when comedy is being made, there will be no more laughter. Comedy is always incorrect at some level, says Victoria.
You know, I think I hear that and I agree with that. I guess my question to the panel is, how is this picture treated differently? And Judith, I think I know your answer, and you're going to be disappointed with it. But how is this picture treated differently if Al Franken is still Al Franken, the guy from Saturday Night Live, as opposed to Al Franken, the senator?
Yeah.
Is there, you don't see this kind of outrage, right?
Well let's
probably not, because he's an elected senator.
And isn't that part? But isn't that part of the issue?
Well, I think he's still a public figure in the same way. We look at Harvey Weinstein, we look at Bill Cosby. It's still held to the same way.
I mean, we're talking about people that I've never, you know, they say, oh, there's sexual allegations against this actor from Gossip Girl. I don't even know who the hell he is,
but he's still
trending. I mean, I don't know who it is.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think so. I think if there's name recognition and certainly in any of these cases, I'll tell you the one that disturbed me the other day was Corey Feldman on Dr. Oz. Did anybody hear this? And they're putting him through all these tests, and he starts coming up. I guess they hypnotize him, and then they go through, and he just starts blurting out names of random people, without any vetting, without any, and that's disturbing too.
You mean people
that had abused him sexually as a child.
Back to Franken, though. Remember, he was talked about as a potential presidential candidate.
Yes.
And you know, this is
I actually did not know that.
Yeah, it's
is that true.
True?
Oh,
it is
yeah.
True.
Oh no. Yeah.
And
yeah.
He kept saying he's not going to run, and now I think the answer is he's really not running. And then for people who care about environmental protection, he was an emerging strong voice on climate change. Yeah. And I worked closely with his office, you know, every week on the Puerto Rico hurricane finance bill. He just traveled down to Puerto Rico in the Virgin Islands 2 weekends ago, and he really smartly brought Senator Lee Lisa Murkowski, the chair of the Energy Committee, with him, who we need on these issues. And so this is heartbreaking. I mean, I talked to Franken's office 2 days ago. They're terrific on environmental issues, and this his voice being diminished, and he is now, I think, politically marginalized, is a real problem.
You
but you still have to hold him to account, like anyone else.
Here's another letter. Newsflash, the Roy Moore story about being banned from the mall is false. Do some research before you state facts.
I did some research. It was confirmed by security staff at the mall, by women who worked in the mall. I think that's pretty settled.
Jules says, sexual harassment by the stereotypical red-blooded American male is an embedded cultural norm. We have to change the culture, from our friend Jules.
Mm-hmm.
Martin says, Judith, you are giving McConnell too much credit in regards to his comments on Moore. McConnell wants Moore to drop out because of the political implications if he is elected to the Senate. He has also been diligently scheming to do anything to avoid that, including delaying the date of the special election and having Luther Strange resign. If he cared that much about women, he wouldn't have prevented Garland from sitting on the Supreme Court in favor of pro-life Gorsuch.
Yeah. I know, and the governor is not going to delay the election in Alabama.
No.
And when someone who you really politically disagree with says something that is honorable, it's important to recognize that.
Sure.
I am not a fan of McConnell.
The other thing about McConnell, and you're right, McConnell does nothing that he has not considered politically. I think we all...
Everything he does is political.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, right.
But the other thing was he was so quick to jump on it. One, yes, I think the politics were a big part of it, but it also makes me think that this is one of these things that, and this is totally unfair, and this is just what I am thinking Mitch McConnell was thinking, that for somebody to jump on something that quickly makes me think that they had heard things, right? One of those things where you know, and we could all name 20 people that we know, you know, in the local community where if something came out, we'd say, yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right? Didn't it seem like that?
Well, you know, you have folks like Mitch McConnell, and, you know, certainly when you work in the political environment, we all know, you know, where the bodies are buried, the skeletons,
right,
things like that. But it depends on when it is politically expedient for those skeletons,
right,
to come out or when it's not. So, you know, certainly.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We will move on to other issues. We have a lot to talk about, and we'll do that after we hear from Ray Graff. 20 minutes, 20 issues. Let's see what we can get through over the next few moments here as we go into the home stretch of the roundtable panel this morning. Rich Honan, Joe Bonilla, Judith Ink, and Alan Chartok. And let us talk about the Keystone Pipeline. What we learned yesterday, it has leaked 210,000 gallons of oil in South Dakota, about 5,000 barrels of oil gushed out of the Keystone Pipeline on Thursday in South Dakota, blackening a grassy field in the remote northeast part of the state and sending cleanup crews and emergency workers scrambling to that site. This is not a little spill from any perspective, said Kim McIntosh, an environmental scientist with the South Dakota Department of Environmental and Natural Resources. The spill near Amherst, South Dakota, comes just days before regulators in neighboring Nebraska decide whether to grant the final permit needed to begin construction on a different pipeline proposal, the Keystone XL, which would be operated by the same company. An announcement in Nebraska is expected on Monday. Judith Ink.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, this is Keystone One, and it's a modern pipeline. It's not old. And, you know, everyone, I think, has heard of Keystone XL, which the Army Corps of Engineers did not issue a needed water permit for during the Obama administration. President Trump overruled that, as he often does, ignoring the science, and approved the federal permits, and now Nebraska will decide next week whether to provide state approval. When I was at EPA, I was always amazed at the number of petroleum spills that take place all over the country. Most of them
in pipelines?
Pipelines.
What makes them spill?
Well, the pipelines, sometimes the metal erodes, sometimes the gauges are not working properly. You know, the school of thought is if you don't want an oil spill, you have reason to be concerned about the oil trains that we see here in Albany.
Sure.
You have reason to be concerned about the barges bringing Bakken crude from Albany down to New Jersey. But pipelines are supposed to be the preferred alternative. But there are routine problems. A lot of it is maintenance. A lot of it is human error. The turnoff valves don't work. But Keystone One, that had this problem yesterday, that's a modern, new pipeline. Nothing's rusted on that
well, what
yet.
What about sabotage? Surely people are thinking that is always a possibility, right?
I wasn't until you said it.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that has not proven. I mean, I don't know what people are thinking.
You think the grassy area
is
actually a grassy knoll? You think that's
very funny, Rich?
I think operation and maintenance.
On the grassy knoll.
Okay. Yeah.
What'd you say, Jude?
I think it's an operation and maintenance issue. And it's also just a reminder that it's not easy to move petroleum and oil all over the country. There's certainly the extraction issues. There's the environmental issues when you burn the oil. Carbon, CO2 lasts in the environment for 10,000 years. A coal plant, an oil plant today emitting CO2. So this is why so many environmentalists want a rapid shift to renewables and moving away from the whole fossil fuel infrastructure.
But do you think it's too late for there to be a shift for Nebraska to actually, whether or not they approve that permit, do you think that will shift their mindset in terms of approving the XL?
I do. I think Nebraska officials were pretty worried about Keystone XL. There's an amazing coalition, untraditional coalition, with ranchers and very conservative people working in partnership with people like me who've spent their careers working to protect the environment. So I think there's something fascinating happening in Nebraska, and this may at least slow down the process to make sure you don't have a leak or a spill like this in Nebraska that happened nearby.
Is it still... Between pipelines, trains, and barges, which is the best?
Yeah, I can't answer that. We had that discussion many times.
Okay.
When the oil trains started to appear in Albany, one of the first things I did is I went to Boston to meet with my counterpart, the regional administrator at the Federal Highway Administration. And I left that meeting more concerned than when I walked in terms of the trains and how the tracks are not inspected often. And, I really appreciate the grassroots activists here in Albany who've been drawing attention to the oil trains. What I heard in that meeting is it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Well, the infrastructure on the train tracks is so old and seldomly maintained, right?
With the barges, Brian Nearing, a very good environmental reporter at the Albany Times Union, he did an early story about one of the very first oil barges that left Albany carrying crude hit a sandbar. And, it was just a miracle that there wasn't an oil spill in the Hudson River.
Yeah, and it hit the sandbar pretty soon after, debarking.
Like a mile or two, right? That does not instill confidence.
Statistically, that wasn't good.
right.
A bad bet, as we would say at the track, Rich.
Right, yes.
All right, issue two. House Republicans on Thursday passed legislation that would overhaul the U.S. tax code, a crucial step toward their effort to enact the centerpiece of President Trump's economic agenda. The bill passed 227 in favor and 205 against. This now goes to the Senate. What happens there, Alan?
Well, in the Senate, they're going to have to make some decisions. For example, the Senate still has SALT in there, right? The deduction of state and local taxes. My feeling is
Senate had it less than the House did, though.
I think it came out of the House, and I think it's now.
I thought the House bill gave you up to $10,000, and the Senate eliminated it entirely.
I switched, but I think that the Senate.
But they said they're open to negotiating.
It's a gimme. So what they do is they throw it in there, and they say, "Okay, you want now? Look, the Republicans think they have to do this before the new year, and the reason they think that is because it's looking more and more like the Democrats could take both houses of Congress now. They can't revise the tax when the Democrats take it because you'll still have the president of the United States up there with his veto, Ben, and he won't allow that to do it. So they have to do it now. My feeling is that the other gimme that they're putting in there, of course, is that they threw in the healthcare bill. And they did that mandate again to take that out when the negotiations begin. That's my bet.
Well, just be aware how quickly this is happening. It moved out of the Senate committee in a very contentious debate between Orrin Hatch and Sherrod Brown.
That was great. Didn't you see that?
Very spirited.
That was great.
So it moved out of committee last night, and they're talking about bringing it to the Senate floor the week after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, they said they wanted it, and they want it quick.
The Republicans need this win to go into the midterms, and if they don't get, I mean, again, a win in their definition, not a win for taxpayers. But you're looking at this in the lens of if they don't get it done now, and they need something to campaign on next year. But again, could this very well be the Republicans' Affordable Care Act? Could this really bite them back?
Well, you know, Joe, I don't know that the real reason they're doing it is only because they need a win. I think that the reason that they're doing it is because the rich guys are going to get richer. And because we know it from Collins and the other guys that they say their donors aren't standing for this.
Right.
And what's fascinating to me is the kind of leadership, if you want to use that word, that Andrew Cuomo is taking, yelling and screaming about the Republicans who he has said he was going to obliviate, congresspeople, and they caught him in a lie. He said in his obliviating, he said that he had talked to each of them, and it turned out he had only talked to one of them. And now you make a mistake like that, and they take that mistake, and they ram it home.
All right, issue three, Robert Menendez. In other news of senators doing bad things, the federal corruption trial of Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey ended in a mistrial on Thursday after jurors said they were unable to reach a verdict, leaving Mr. Menendez, a Democrat, free to return to Congress, but injecting uncertainty as he faces re-election next year and his party faces a difficult battle to retake the Senate.
Which is why, when he came out of there, he did something you almost never see. Rich, the lawyer, I want to ask you about this. He went after the prosecutors with everything he had, because if he wants to win an election, he has to say these are bad people. It's interesting that the jury, what we're getting out of the jury is it was almost completely for acquittal. There were two holdouts.
Yeah, he almost had it. Yeah.
The other thing he said that I found amazing is he said, to those of you who were digging my political grave so they could jump in my seat, I know who you are and I won't forget you.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Whew, that's New Jersey.
Yeah, that is New Jersey.
No, but that's what anybody would think. It's just that he said it.
You
know, I think
we're in new political times. Yeah, you can say whatever the hell you want.
You say what you think now.
He has to say it to legitimize himself with the voters. You see, I mean, otherwise, I don't think he would have done that.
That was a bizarre threat. I mean, I think people were relieved because if he was convicted, I believe Chris Christie in his final weeks in office would have gotten a replacement.
Exactly.
And God forbid, maybe he would have named himself. I don't know if that was possible. But now, if there's a future trial, or what's more likely to happen is the Senate is resuming their investigation. And so if Menendez does not survive that, the incoming Democratic governor, who I think is real good, Phil Murphy in New Jersey, will name the replacement.
All right. So and then the last issue, and then we'll spend more time on letters, is the fact that we learned yesterday that a Homeland Security official resigned after comments linking blacks to laziness and promiscuity. This is a disturbing story as well. A political appointee in the Department of Homeland Security abruptly resigned after the disclosure Thursday he previously made derogatory remarks about black people and Muslims on conservative talk radio. Reverend Jamie Johnson, Reverend, who was appointed to the head of DHS's Center for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships in April.
By the way, what is that? Why do we even have that?
Well, we do.
Probably Bush era.
Separation of church and state.
What is that?
But every time one of these dopes every time one of these dopes does something this stupid, they're done. Who was this?
James Watt.
He was,
right?
Watt, yeah. We talked about the size of shoes and stuff like that.
What? What did James Watt do?
James Watt was the guy who said, I have...
James Watt was the guy that said, was the Department of Interior.
Right, and, yeah. And he said, I have... And he listed the minorities that he had in his office.
Oh, that's right, right. Yeah.
But there was one guy who said things about black people because they...
That might have been Earl Butts.
Butts, that's who it was.
That's
Earl
right.
Butts. Exactly
this is,
right.
This is Nixon-era agriculture secretary, yeah. I'm going to take a guess at.
You're exactly right.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But James Watt was the guy who was like...
He was a Reagan guy.
Yeah.
Oh,
you
I
would
know
think,
James Watt.
You would think they
still
wouldn't
have
do
the
that.
T-shirt.
They keep on doing it every step
back,
of the way.
Back to the Reverend. This is something he said in 2008. It was an audio on CNN. And my question is, who is vetting these political appointees for the Trump White House that they don't find something like
well, who's
this?
Who's vetting the judges?
Yeah.
For goodness sake, who's vetting these judges? They're terrible.
And again, just to clarify, CNN brought up the tape. They found it from a program called The Right Balance on Accent Radio Network. And
but when you go through, look, I went through a political vetting process when I got my Obama appointee.
Yeah.
You're interviewed by the FBI, and a number of people from the White House Personnel Office and the FBI ask you, is there anything in your past that we should know about? And they get very specific. They want to look at your social media. They want to know about anything you may have said or done in the past that could come up and be an embarrassment to the administration.
Sure.
I think this reverend should have remembered this interview.
Well, no, I think it's more, it's almost more disturbing that he didn't.
Right. Right? And mean, then there's probably
like,
nobody
yes,
properly vetting this.
Yeah.
Right.
I think he's thinking, I just said what I thought.
Right.
Yeah.
I think he misjudged, meaning that he thought that the Trump people would love to have him saying this kind of stuff. And he didn't realize what the consequences were going to be, but he took his cues from what he thought was coming out of the Trump administration.
Johnson extolled the economic success of American Jews and said it's an indictment of America's black community that has turned America's major cities into slums because of laziness, drug use, and sexual promiscuity. This came after the question from the conservative radio program was, so a lot of blacks are anti-Semitic, right? And that was when he went off on that.
Thanks,
okay.
Thanks, Reverend.
That's right.
Okay. We have letters. We have a few minutes. Let's finish up with those.
Dot says, Judith speaks for the future, for nature, for life. So glad to hear her. One for you, Judith. Bruce says, the tax cut is going to hurt the middle class. Even the tax cuts who get just a standard deduction and get a cut now, the cut is only short term and will go away in a couple of years. The cuts for the top 1% in big business are permanent. They are also trying to use this to repeal Obamacare and cut Medicare and Medicaid. And that's from Bruce. You know, that's an interesting point that is made here. Not that we on this panel don't all know this already. The question is, what percentage of the American people know it, and how are they going to get it out there, the Democrats, to make the point? They did it successfully with health care. Hey, you know, 23 million people are going to lose their health care. But, you know, here we have a different story. It's complicated, and you got to get the word out.
That's why they're moving fast.
No, they have to. But you have to figure out what the right message could be, and that's going to resonate with folks.
And you're the expert in that, Joe. And what should the right message be?
You got to figure something out. I mean, again, when you have issues that affect somebody's everyday life, you have to distill it down to a simple message.
You're going to get screwed.
Yeah, you're going to get screwed. That's exactly what it could be.
Right. And what about property taxes, says Joan? How come Cuomo has not brought up New York property taxes will go up if less Fed money is coming into the state? That should be an outrage. Well, that's interesting in that Cuomo, the last thing Cuomo wants to do is to say to people, your taxes are going up. You know, even if it's what he's taken us right up to that point, right? He has said this will be a killer for New York State if this thing happens. But he doesn't go over that line because when you read his lips and he says, I'm going to raise your taxes, he loses. That's the end. And he knows it. Okay. And then Marina says, we are very disappointed that after an important tax vote, most of the show is being sent on Al Franken. You know now that that's not true. Heather says, I am so concerned about what this tax plan will mean for New York, particularly if the SALT deduction is eliminated. It feels like there was much more resistance and outrage regarding health care, and this tax plan seems to be sailing through despite what it will take away from the lower and middle class. What can we do? Our New York senators are voting against it, and even some Republican reps in New York voted against it. Where is the statewide and national mobilization, you know, against this? That's a very good point.
I agree with her. I actually agree with her, except for I really don't think that this tax cut, it's not a tax cut. Mm-hmm. I don't think that this tax plan is going to as negatively, I don't think it's going to negatively affect the lower and middle income people. I really don't.
Well,
at least not in the initial instance.
Well,
we have less than a minute.
5 years down.
But I agree with her on everything. We'll have to see.
You are seeing some statewide mobilization. You had mayors earlier this week, 50 mayors across political stripes that all came together trying to call for the representatives to, you know, vote against this bill.
But they don't have the numbers.
Elias says, according to the nonpartisan text Policy Center, the House bill gives 80% of the total tax cut to those with income over $1 million a year. The remaining 20% is shared by those making under $1 million yearly.
Yeah, mainly because it's not a tax cut.
And Daisy says, right. Hi, panel. This tax bill will come around and bite us in the you-know-what when it destroys Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Many conservative economists say it will do this. Is this Paul Ryan and the Randians' ultimate goal, to kill those programs? That's from Daisy.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to Rich Honan, Joe Bonilla, Judith Henke, Alan Chartok.